Hello, I'm Tyrone Hyde, the CEO of Washington Brown, and welcome to 10 with Ty, the podcast where I ask the smartest people I know the same 10 questions to unlock the key to their success and hopefully leave a playbook for my daughter and your family too about investing. Now, before we get started, this podcast is general in nature and not intended to be individual financial advice. We always recommend that you sit down with your accountant or financial planner before making any financial decisions. Now, let's get on with the show. And welcome to 10 with Ty. My next guest is Dale Beaumont. Dale's been building companies since he was 19 years old. He's a serial entrepreneur. In fact, I reckon he had his first lemonade stand when he was like 2 years old. He's an international speaker, author of 19 best-selling books, has raised over $2 million for charity. He's actually currently building workspaces in the Philippines to house 10,000 VAs. He runs one of the world's best business programs, if you ask me. It's called Business Blueprint. I've actually been a member for 10 years. But what I like most about Dale is his work-life balance. His goal is to work for 2 months and then travel for 1 month. Work for 2 months, travel for 1 month. And based upon his Facebook feed, he nails it. In fact, I reckon there should be a board game called Where in the World is Dale Right Now? Dale, welcome to 10 with Ty.
Thank you so much.
I'm so excited to have you on.
Yeah, and I saw a couple of the questions, and this is something that I don't get to talk about every day, and I'm looking forward to sharing some new stuff with everybody.
Great, thanks. I'm looking forward to it. Before we start, Tim with Ty, I just want to ask the travel stuff. How do you do it? Like seriously, how do you? You've got two teenage kids, right? Two teenage boys, and you travel with your family. How do you do it?
Yeah, so We heard when we became parents that, oh, when you become parents, you know, you're not going to be able to travel like you do before kids. And so I suppose we decided we were going to prove everybody wrong. So when our son was 6 weeks old, we went on our first, trip. And yeah, there was obviously, you know, challenges with, little kids and nappies and sleep times and jet lag and all those things, but you just deal with it. And so then when our next child came along, we did the same thing, and it's kind of all the kids have ever known. So it's kind of normal for us now. And like you mentioned, our rhythm is 2 months kind of on, 1 month off, 2 months kind of like, you know, working, living in Sydney and running our businesses, and then 1 month traveling the world somewhere. So yeah, we've basically done that now for 15 years and visited 85 countries. And we, you know, have learned how to live on the road and run our businesses and have fun at the same time. And it's just, it's our passion.
And is it going to stop? Are you going to continue doing it forever?
I think forever. That's the thing that brings us a lot of joy is, you know, experiencing new cultures, different foods, different places. And so we definitely are going to try and savor the last like 3 or 4 years with our teenage kids before they, you know, go off and start doing their own thing. And then we probably will do it all again, but just with Catherine, my wife, and I, without the kids. We love to travel, and we love traveling with friends now as well. A lot of it has just been with our kids. We decided as we're, you know, getting a little bit older that we want to share these experiences with people that we love. So later this year in December, we're taking a group of 60 of our friends to Egypt with us for a 2.5 week trip around Egypt and then going to Jordan and Petra. And so our goal is to do a trip like that somewhere in the world. With 50-60 great friends, you know, every second year, every third year, and just have fun together.
That's great. I still want to be part of Business Blueprint. I can't come to the Egypt one, but I want to go to the next one. So let's aim for that. Now, just one final question. Yeah, I know you've met more entrepreneurs than I reckon anyone in Australia, right? You've trained 5,000 people through Business Blueprint. Is it? Is about 5,000 entrepreneurs, like that, yep. Right? So my question to you. I've always wondered, are entrepreneurs born or can they be made, Dale?
Okay. So the answer is yes, they can be made. However, When I did my book, Secrets of Male Entrepreneurs and Secrets of Female Entrepreneurs, like I was of the philosophy that you can learn anything, and it's true, you can. You know, many people became entrepreneurs, you know, in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and even, you know, it's a classic story of Colonel Sanders that started KFC because he didn't like his pension check and decided he wanted to start a business. So you can become an entrepreneur later on in life if you really want to. However, probably 80% of the entrepreneurs that I interviewed for my books, it was kind of like, it was almost like in them before they even knew it. They were having newspaper runs or the lemonade stand, or they were selling basketball cards, or they were, you know, trading marbles, or they were doing something, you know, and a lot of them sort of even had other kids working for them, you know, before they even, you know, knew how that they were actually running a business. And so I was kind of surprised by the fact that a lot of the entrepreneurs were born just different, and they were born just like not following the norm. But yes, you can. You buck the trend, and you can learn entrepreneurship at any age as well.
I remember once I was at one of your conferences, and I said to you, Dale, is there any business that you think you couldn't help, right? And you said, well, no, I think I can help any business, because every business has to have a website. Right. And it's like, it's what you said. I went, yeah, no, you're right. Even like, you know, funeral parlors have to have a website. Any business still needs a website, right?
Yeah.
And so you can help on that side as well. Anyway. And now, Dale, are you ready to play 10 with Ty?
Let's go.
I've got this buzzer I want to press. Wait a second. Here we go. Okay. Question number one. What has been your best investment?
All right. This answer is going to seem like a total suck up, but it's not, okay? I would say my best investment has been choosing my life partner, basically my wife, Catherine.
Love it.
And the reason why is because I think so much of your happiness in life and so much of your potential is going to be having a partner that's going to support you on your journey. And not just be supportive. Catherine has done that in spades, but she's also built it with me. And she has been on the. We met at like a personal development course that we were doing together. Oh, we both had goals and dreams of growing ourselves and also helping people and making a big impact. And so we kind of like, you know, teamed up, and a lot of people see me as the guy out the front with the jazz hands, you know, up on stage. But she is behind the scenes, you know, making things happen, managing all the finances. You know, we now have a large property portfolio as well. And it's more than a full-time job to manage all of the investments and things that we have. And I used to just, you know, we used to joke and I used to say, I used to make the money and she used to manage the money. But now she actually laughs at me saying, last year I made more money than you, because me managing our money is actually making more money than you working for the money. Because,
I love it.
You know, when you've got money. So it's anyway, so having someone who's on the same page that is helping you, that is honestly my biggest wealth creation secret, is a partner that supports you and is helping you on the journey.
That's beautiful. Beautiful. See, I have the same experience with my wife. Like she's been a lot involved with the book. We've been together since we first kissed when we were 16, right? And so it's been a lot longer in our life we've been together than we haven't. But she knows more about property depreciation, Dale, than anyone, any other quantity surveyor in Sydney in Australia, if you ask me, because she half wrote my book. Anyway, so I definitely get the journey of business with your partner. Having a partner that is on the same page is definitely something that I cherish as well.
Yeah, and I would say to young people as well about just choosing a partner wisely as well. It's and I understand that not every marriage works out, but in terms of we're talking about wealth creation here, if you go through a divorce and you lose half your money, and that happens to you a couple of times, it's
expensive. It's an expensive habit.
It's an expensive habit, absolutely. And so if you can choose wisely, you'll be much better off personally and also financially. Let's just put it that way.
Yep, cool. All right, question number two. Now, I've learned a lot more from my worst investments than I have from my best investments. I don't know about you, but I'm wondering what's been your worst investment, Dale?
Look, I think there's a few properties that we still have in our portfolio that probably haven't, you know, returned like others. You know, some of the off the plan properties and places that were, you know, going to go nuts. And sort of, I was a bit hands off at that particular point. And I was like, you know, just give me three and just sort of, you know, blindly trusted someone else. Catherine had a bad feeling, but I said, oh, look, let's just do it anyway. And so I should have listened to her more. There was, you know, a couple of those and also a few, you know, stocks that I invested in as well, because they were just going up and up and up. And I thought that they were just going to continue to go in that that direction. Yeah. We had made some great investments, but there's also been a few duds in there as well. But it's taught me a lot. Taught me about what not to do, and definitely helped me to develop my rules as an investor, what we do, what we don't do. So, you know, it's not all doom and gloom. Like you said, you can learn a lot from your failures as much as your success.
Sometimes some of the best investment would be to do nothing, right? And just wait. Been a bit in my nature that I kind of have to be fully invested all my life, you know, but sometimes I just switch back. Why don't you just wait? When Sydney property market goes down 15%, then it's a good time to buy. Ken with Ty is brought to you by Washington Brown, the property depreciation expert. Okay, question number three. What's the most valuable investment advice you've ever received, Dale?
So I think it would be around investing, you know, in your education. In fact, in how I started my journey actually was that when I was 18 years old, I went along to a money expo. Basically what had happened was I was a pretty good saver as a kid and I had a part-time job since the age of 15. And actually before that, I even worked for my dad because my dad ran a small business. And so I started working for him when I was maybe 12 or 13 and he just used to give me a little pay packet. And so, you know, I'd saved up that money. And then when I was 15, I got a better job. And so I'd saved up, I had about $8,000 or $9,000. And I thought to myself, well, what am I going to do with this money? And I could either just leave it in the bank. And at the time, you know, I was getting like whatever, 3-4% interest. Now it's like 0% interest. But anyway, I went along to this money expo. And this lady kind of like jumped out from the stand and she's like, hi. And I said, hi. And she's like, what are you doing here? And I'm like, I'm thinking about investing. And she, I think it was because, you know, I was 18 years of age and I probably was, I don't know if I even was in my school uniform when I kind of went there. I definitely stood out and didn't look like, you know, all the other, you know, brokers and stuff like that walking around, you know, in suits. And so, I told her basically my story. I'd saved up this money. I'm thinking about investing it. You know, I was looking at these like Colonial First State, you know, managed fund. And I was like, this guy was like, oh, look, you can get 16% and look at this fund and look at this fund. And I was looking through all these prospectuses and stuff like that. And this is before the days you go online and put in, you know, money in an ETF and kind of do it all yourself. It's so easy now to actually with these low cost index funds. But before that, it was managed funds were all of the rage. And so, and she said to me, look, you want some advice? I said, yes. She goes, you're so young. You got so much life and so much potential. If I was you, I would invest it, half of it at least, you know, in yourself and to educate yourself. Because if you can invest up here, you know, you can make millions. And so that's when I went along to this, I went along to a wealth creation course, right? It was 4 days. And the first 3 days were all about mindset, all about personal development. And that's where I met my now wife, Catherine. She was doing the course at the same time. And so we were kind of like, you know, doing this that course. And then we kind of started working for the company and we became like part of the support crew and stuff like that. And that's probably the best decision that I ever made because that sent me on like this whole other path and trajectory where I was learning from other successful people. And then from that moment on, any guru that came to town, Tony Robbins, Brian Tracy, Zig Ziglar, Jim Rohn, Brandon Bays, like anyone that was successful, I would go along to their events. And sometimes I'd just, you know, rock up and, you know, pay my $100 and sit in the audience. And other times I'd invest in, you know, their CDs or DVDs, or if they had a workshop, you know, that was a couple of grand, I would invest in that. And that's completely changed my life. I probably invested $500,000 now in education and courses and training, you know, but as a result, I've, you know, generated over 50 million in terms of, you know, business income. So it's the best decision I think I ever got was investing in myself.
In terms of education, I agree. Like investing in education is huge, and part of the business blueprint. Why? That's actually probably been one of my best investments. Is going to your program. I'm not just saying because you're here, but it's like the $5,000, whatever I've paid per annum, right, has paid off so much many times to the point now. Not just from what I learned from you, but also just even the clients. We've got some clients now that generate like 50 times my fee to pay you, but also the mental side as well, which I love from the program as well. And that's why I've been there for 10 years. You know, so I still get something out of it every. And I guess when you get a big enough business, you only need to learn one little thing that will pay for the program fee, right? And you know, things like Google AdWords change so often, so you kind of get someone back every 2 years for a Google AdWords, and now it's AI, right? Mm. And now it's that stuff's just blowing my mind, and I'm sure it's blowing your mind. I know you're all over it, right? In fact, you know, funny story. When ChatGPT first came out, I went, "This is insane," right? And I don't know if you know, but there's an ETF called Robots, right, which is just basically invests in anything related to artificial intelligence, whether it be the chips. Like that's their biggest component is the chips that power it, right? And they've gone mad. All right, question number four. Now I know you're a systems kind of guy, right? And when it comes to your portfolio mix, you're probably the most systemized person I've ever met. When it comes to your portfolio mix, how do you deal with your portfolio? Do you have a system in place to say, I want 50% residential property, I want 30% of commercial? How do you structure your portfolio?
Yeah, it's sort of just for the first 10 years sort of grew organically. Like I've always, at the beginning, I was 100% in business. And this is part of like a lesson that we might talk about later on. For the first probably 8 years, it was like, don't talk to me about making money because I'm too busy making money. That was kind of like my philosophy. And I was just 100% invested in my business. And I missed a whole bunch of opportunities and should have invested in a property, you know, much sooner. And we actually only ended up buying our first property kind of out of necessity, because when Catherine was 7 months pregnant, we were renting, and the person that owned our properties, "Oh, by the way, we're going to be selling your property next month." And it was like, "Oh, we're going to bring in a baby into this world, and we're going to kind of got nowhere to live." And so we ended up talking to the neighbor next door, and we basically bought the apartment, you know, next door. So that's kind of the kick up the ass that we needed to kind of get into investing. And then we kind of bought that one, and then we thought, "Oh, let's kind of like buy another one. That wasn't too bad. Let's buy another one." And then we've been a lot more proactive about property, and we've tried to buy at least one property every year, you know, for the last like 10 years, sometimes two properties. So what our mix looks like now is probably 50% business, maybe 30% property, and probably 10% shares and 10% super. So that's kind of roughly where we're at right now. But we probably will need to refine that mix a little bit more. That's something that we're working on.
Tell everyone about the work pod you're creating in the Philippines, because that sounds pretty fascinating to me.
Yeah, so a big part of my business success has been about building a team in the Philippines that runs like a lot of our business, and it's been super successful for me, and I've actually now helped a lot of my clients to build teams in the Philippines as well, and the word's kind of spread, and now with salaries in Australia approaching, you know, for some industries like $100,000 a year, we have the highest wages virtually anywhere in the world. It's very, very expensive to grow a business, and for a lot of people, it kind of wipes out pretty much all their profit. It's just wages, and so people can't just keep, you know, running businesses like that. They need to take all of the jobs that are not, you know, the most productive things to do locally, and to have them done offshore. And that actually is a great thing for everybody, and helps you to become a lot more profitable. So we have now, in the last 3 years, we've hired 700 staff in the Philippines. Wow. Now, they don't all work for us. They work for our clients' businesses. Some just have one, like a remote executive assistant. And some now have teams of 5, 10, 20, 50 staff in the Philippines. So we set a crazy goal to in the next 5 years, we want to have 10,000 staff in the Philippines. Yeah. And so, you know, where Cody is my business partner, he's over there in the Philippines right now. We're looking at another building that will take about 800 staff, which will help us with our growth. So, yeah, we're pretty serious about making a big impact. And it's not just the business side that is getting me excited, because I'm kind of at the point now whereby financially I'm, you know, secure. But I just love... I think that I've done a lot of charity, and we can talk a little bit about a bike ride that I do in Thailand every single year. And charity is important, but sometimes the best charity is giving people a well-paid job. Yeah, and especially right. in a developing country like the Philippines, by creating, you know, great jobs for people and being able to provide for their family, that just lifts people out of poverty. And it helps people to, to basically, you know, build, security for their family and to be able to educate the next generation. So for me, it's like, and Cody as well, it's like a calling that we have to go, if we can create 10,000, well, high paying jobs compared to, you know, the $2 an hour that they're getting if they're working, you know, in McDonald's or some type of, you know, factory, they'd be paid like $2. If we can pay $5 or $6, then that's going to, you know, change the lives of, you know, the whole generations. Probably those 10,000 people will end up impacting, you know, 100,000 people or more.
It must be pretty emotional when you go over there and see what you're doing and helping these people change their lives.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and there was one staff member who basically was working, like he was a really talented guy, but just during COVID, he got laid off and he ended up basically working as a fisherman, and he wasn't able to make enough money selling fish. And so he actually took a loan from like a loan shark so he could basically pay his bills. And then basically they threatened his kind of like life if he didn't kind of like pay up. And so he ended up working, you know, for, we didn't know this at the time, but he ended up applying as a virtual assistant. One of our clients hired him, paid him, you know, decent salary. He was then able to pay off all of his debts, and now he's debt free and he's supporting his family. And he was like, you know, I was, yeah, I don't know what would have happened to me if I, you know, if I didn't, you know, get this job and opportunity. So there's so many amazing stories like that of young, talented people that are really smart, but they just don't have the same opportunities. It's hard for people to really understand when you live in a Western country where every shop, you know, has got like, you know, barista, 100 grand a year for a barista. And then people are still walking past, like, I don't get out of bed for 100 grand. You know, that's the attitude that we have in Australia. But there are young people in these developing countries that would kill to have those opportunities, you know? So this is what really excites us, is to go, how do we change the lives of, you know, more than 100,000 people?
That's fantastic. So we've got 10 VAs working for us in the Philippines, and we love it. They're so diligent and friendly and just fantastic. And I don't think Wash and Brown could now run without them. So anyway, we've actually developed more of their roles now. Now they're doing like admin, like even far greater, and they're actually really loving the more of the challenge as well. But it's, you know what it's like. They do love a good system there, and you have, as long as you document it right. I'm sure you've had some trials and tribulations, but once you get the system right, it's really good. Question number five: how would you invest $20,000 as a 20-year-old?
There's probably the perfect answer to this, but I think I would take 25% of it, like $5,000, if you had $20,000, and I would invest it in education. You know, you could start with podcasts, which are free anyway. You know, you could buy books. You know, you could buy a truckload of books for $1,000, and then you could invest in a couple of courses that you feel would really make a big difference. I reckon you'd take another probably 25% as well, so the other quarter, and put it into a low cost index fund, just like some, you know, ETFs, you know, like the S&P, even if you just did the S&P 500, and just something to start, because I wish I started, you know, much sooner. I lost a sort of a decade of compound interest because, you know, I was just like, oh, I'll get to that later. So if you can develop the habit of just starting to put aside 10% of everything you make and just, you know, chuck it in there. And even if now they've got these tools that are just like auto debit, where, you know, the moment you pay hits your account, you know, any money hits your account, just takes 10% and it just disappears and it goes into your, you know, long-term compounding account. Then probably 25% you'd have basically for your deposit for your property. And so it's good to see that amount of money there and go, okay, well, if you know, for more for me to get my first property, I might need to get to $50,000 or something along those lines. And so I'm at five now. I'm already kind of like started. What do I do to keep getting to that kind of goal of being able to afford my deposit? And then the other $5,000, I'd probably recommend either having as cash or getting ready to maybe invest in some type of a business. Now, you could argue, well, why don't you just chuck that in the compounding account and just let that compound until you maybe need it for some type of a business that you may want to start in the future. But I think that kind of little quadrant of education, shares, property, and business, that's kind of a pretty balanced, you know, way of going about it.
Yeah, I like it. You know, speaking of compounding interest, I saw an interview with Warren Buffett the other day. And he said something like he first stocks he ever bought, he spent $127 on the stocks in 1950. So it was the first parcel he ever bought. And he said, if I'd just invested that in an index fund in the S&P 500 today, that would be worth $450,000. So that's the power of compounding interest, right?
Wow.
Yeah, I know. It was like he said, this will blow your mind. That's how he started this conversation. So anyway, I think he knows a little bit about investing, old Warren. Do you own an investment property? Wash & Brown has helped over 250,000 property investors pay less tax with a depreciation schedule. Visit washandbrown.com.au to pay less tax today. Dale, question number six. How would you invest $500,000 as a 50-year-old? Let's just say you came to an inheritance. How would you invest that $500,000?
Yeah, and first of all, I want to preface this by saying that, you know, financial advice, I'm just sharing just from my own experience, really. This is not actual advice for anyone. You should probably talk to, you know, a licensed person to of exactly, you know, what to do. Like in terms of business, I can answer almost anything. That's one of my jam, you know, business coaching. But when it comes to financial advice, I don't know if this is the sort of the best answer, but if you've got about $500,000, then and you're 50, then you're closer to retirement than not. And so I think that self-managed super is the best wealth creation / tax efficient vehicle that there is. And so being able to buy a piece of commercial real estate in a self-managed super fund would probably be a pretty, you know, smart thing to do. So with that $500K, you might be able to buy like a $2 million commercial property, and you'd have to obviously talk to, you know, a broker and see how much you can borrow, and also see how much it's going to cost you, and see whether the rent is going to, you know, fully pay the mortgage. But certainly some type of real estate investment commercial is going to probably give you quite a good cash flow as well. But if you could store that inside a self-managed super fund, that's probably going to be the best wealth creation vehicle. And you also, got some good leverage as well. You could take that $500,000 and just put it into, you know, stocks if you wanted to as well. But 10 years before retirement isn't a lot of time for compounding. And depending what shares you're going to be investing in, you're probably not going to have that great cash flow. So I don't know. What about you? What would your advice be, Ty?
Well, if there's one thing I've learned over the last 30 years of investing, Dale, it's that banks never lose money. Right, the four-pillar banking system we've got in this country, it's like banks are protected species. So I'd probably definitely put a large portion of that money into bank shares, and I'd reinvest those dividends so you get that compounding growth as well. But of course, property's my thing, so I'd buy a property where I could add some value, do a $20,000 to $50,000 makeover, because that's a sweet spot if you ask me. I've seen too many people overcapitalize on their renos, and doing that renovation, you'll also get the depreciation benefits too. So bank shares, probably where I could add value. That's where I'd start, Dale.
Okay, cool. So, good answer.
Yeah. Okay, now, say you could go back in time and tap on your Dale's shoulder, 20-year-old Dale. What would you tell yourself about investing that you've learned over the last 20-odd years?
I'm glad that I got into business fairly early. I think that was a good decision. So I would sort of like, you know, say do that again. But I'd also sort of say, look, set up, you know, that share portfolio, just like the low cost index funds, just like set it up at the beginning. Even if you just put like, you know, whatever, $100, you know, a week into it, just do that. And then the moment you can afford to do more. Because I missed sort of like a decade of that compounding. I should have started like a lot sooner. And, you know, I would have ridden the wave of like Apple and Google and Tesla and all these kind of companies that, were tiny back then. And now they're these behemoths, and even like companies like Amazon as well. That I think was the 2000s. Yes, of course, we had that, you know, the little the dot-com bubble burst. But then the companies that survived that, you know, they went on to become some of the biggest companies in the world. And so if you invested in that decade, then that was would have been amazing. Of course, we can't go back in time, but I would have done that. And then basically got my first property sooner. I just thought to myself, oh, I'll wait till later. I think the sooner you can get your first property, you go, oh, that wasn't too bad. And then, you know, you wait a couple of years and the equity goes up, and then you go, oh, I've got enough to buy a second, I've got enough to buy a third. You know, I probably could have had five or six extra properties if I just started sooner. So that would have been my advice to myself financially.
It's funny you say, when I was in America once, and it was like in the early 2000s, I think, and on the screen was Jeff Bezos, right? And this is a young Jeff Bezos talking about what he's going to do with Amazon. And, you know, he's pretty kooky, right? And I was looking at him going, why would anyone invest in this guy? It's like, this guy's mad. He kind of showed me.
Yeah.
he did all right, I think. Anyway. Okay, question number 8, Dale. What legacy do you want to leave your family or your community?
Look, I think legacy, for me, it's not so much about leaving them, you know, any money. Of course, they probably will get, you know, a decent amount of money. But I really think that it's the skills. It's the mindset that you pass on, you know, that is the biggest gift. It's not actually the money. Like, I've told my mum and dad, if you give me any money when you die, I will be annoyed, because you've given me everything that I need, like right now. And I want you to enjoy your money that you've worked hard for. I want you to spend like everything before you die. And my brother feels the same way as well. It's like, that's what I want to do for my kids, is get them to the point whereby they don't actually need our money, because they've got everything within themselves to be happy, to be secure, to be successful, to whatever level that they want to. They don't necessarily have to make millions. They can just, you know, get a little home and raise some kids and have a job, and that's totally fine. But if they can be good people and they can be happy with what they have, and they can have the tools to be more successful or less successful, then that's really what a legacy is for me. And then the other one globally is just about creating jobs in developing countries. We've chosen the Philippines. And if I could, you know, before I die, say that I've, you know, created 10,000 jobs, I'd be pretty happy.
That's a pretty amazing answer. It's tricky, isn't it, these days, like where, you know, I didn't get on a plane till I was 20, you know, and now it's getting on a plane to go to Bali. It seems like it's just getting the bus up the road, right? And how do you get that hunger for your kids? Like, I know you're with them so much. They must just see you constantly being, you know, immersive in your business and meeting all these entrepreneurs all the time. And any tips on how we can continue to motivate your kids when, you know, they seem to get a lot more than what probably you or I did when we were growing up?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting one, because I do think if you try to force it or to you know, try too hard, that the kids will kind of like, you know, repel, and oftentimes it can have a reverse effect. They can feel more deflated because they feel like they're not living up to your kind of like standards. And so I think the key is kind of not to push them, to be the example and to say, look, just, you know, be a good person and be happy with what you have. And if you want more, that's great. You can always do more. You know, you can always have more, because you can always do more. And anytime you're willing, because I was trying to get my son when he was 12, I'm like, the future is e-commerce. You need to start an e-commerce business. You know, do this. I was forcing him. He did nothing, you know, for 3 years. And then finally, he's come to me just a couple of weeks ago and said, hey, Dad, I think I'd like to talk to you about that e-commerce thing. It's like, you know, the moment I let go and I stopped hounding him and gave him some space, all of a sudden then, you know, he wants to chat about it. And I've given him a book around, you know, how to you know, get started with e-commerce and stuff. And so I think all you can do is just, you know, be an example, and to and when they're ready, they will come to you.
Okay, I like that. Was that Finn?
That's Finn, yeah.
Just for people that don't know, Finn spoke on stage at Business Blueprint the other day for the first time, and it was amazing. Yes. And he stole your set, didn't he?
He did. Yeah. So Finn is 15, and he kind of came to me a couple of months ago as well. In addition to this, you know, e-commerce business, he's like, "Dad, I want to, you know, kind of like be on the stage. I want to present at your event." And I've got this section where I talk about technology. I said, "Well, what section do you want to present?" He goes, "I want to present that section." I'm like, "No, that's mine." Anyway, it was great. I gave him a spot, and he did a fantastic job. And then he said to me, "Well, how do I, you know, if I want to do this as a career, what do I need to do?" And that's when I said, "Well, look, you're going to need to have some runs on the board, mate. Like, if you're going to get people to listen to you, you can't just write off my coattails. You're going to have to create a business of your own." So that's when he's like put two and two together and thought, "Oh, maybe I'll do this e-commerce thing." And so I think what you need to do is just, not sort of force them. And even as well, like, take away the attachment. Like I've said to my kids, "Look, if you want to, if you want to be a barman for the rest of your life, as long as you're a good person, they're my non-negotiables. As long as you're a good person, and as long as you, are happy with life, I don't want you going through life, you know, being depressed, because you know there's so much joy in this world and so many amazing things that are out there. Then that's it. That's all I can want. And if you want to follow my path and do business and make money and all this type of stuff, I'll help you. But you know, you don't. I'm not putting any responsibility on you. And I know it's something that maybe I'll change my mind and in the future, like about this generational wealth kind of like concept. But I do think that it's got to be something that they need to want themselves. If they don't kind of like want it and you just force them, eventually they'll just, you know, go the opposite way.
Fantastic. All right, question number 9. Now, to a lot of people, including myself, you are the definition of success in terms of your business and your work-life balance, etc. But success can mean many things to many different people. But what does success look like to you, Dale?
There'd be a few words that come to mind. This is just my definition. I think that success is really... your definition of success is success. For me, it's about control of how I choose to live my life. And part of that is being an entrepreneur gives me a certain amount of control that I don't have to, work if I don't want to, or, you know, if I want to travel, I don't have to ask anyone for anyone's permission. That's just what's important to me, to have that autonomy and that control and to be like a bit of a free spirit. So that brings me a lot of joy to know that I'm in control, you know, of my life. The other thing that's important to me is around health, becoming more, because I think that's the ultimate form of wealth. If you don't have your health, you have kind of nothing. So actually focusing on eating well, exercising, you know, staying fit. I think that's something that's a big part of, you know, success. You can have all the money in the world, but if, and I think Carrie Packer once said, "I'd give away all of my money if I could just have my health back." And so that's something that's important. And then another thing I think is impact, you know, actually helping others, making a difference, being able to, you know, realize that, in life, it's not just about what you get, you know, it's about what you give and how you contribute and how you kind of help others as well. So, they're probably the things that are important to me. And of course, another thing, success is about friends and my family and about my, you know, relationship with my wife and my, you know, kind of kids, because that's something that, you know, should never take for granted. There's a lot of very unhappy relationships out there, a lot of people that have, a lot of challenges with their kids. Maybe they might be in a position where they have no contact with their children, you know, anymore, or their kind of like grandchildren. And when I do a bit of a stock take, you know, before I think about my bank balance, which is way down here, I'm like, okay, you know, am I still together? Do I still love my wife? Do I still, you know, am able to hug my kids, you know, because they're there, you know, have I got my arms and my legs and I'm still kind of like healthy and I can still go for a run. I can, you know, still play soccer and all that stuff. And, you know, I live in one of the, you know, most beautiful places, in the world, in or just in Sydney in general, wherever you live, you know, it's such a beautiful place, then I'm doing okay. And of course, I'm helping people and making a difference. If I do that checklist in my mind, you know, I just feel so much better about myself. And, you know, it helps that I've got money and assets as well. But I think all of that doesn't matter if you don't have all the other things.
I think you're doing better than okay, Dale. I think you're living a great life. You know when you do your 90-day action plan?
Yes.
Every quarter, Dale does a 90-day action plan. And is part of that health and the impacts, is that part of your action plan?
Yeah, probably not. It doesn't fall into the five things in business. Normally, they're all business related, but certainly I've got a set of goals for my personal life as well. And I've got like a calendar now where I put in, okay, this is like what I want to put into my fitness, and this is what I want to do to stay healthy as well, and also to spend time with my kids and my wife and travel. So all of that kind of gets locked and loaded into my diary. In fact, every year I do like a life planning day where I just plan out the next sort of 12 months what's kind of important. And so that's another thing that I do as part of Business Blueprint, is help people not only to plan their business but also to plan their life as well.
Ken with Ty is brought to you by Washington Brown, the property depreciation expert. All right, question number 10, Dale. Warren Buffett is quoted as saying, rule number one as an investor, never lose money. Rule number two, never forget rule number one. Dale, how do you not lose money?
Well, this is an interesting question because, one way to lose money is to do nothing, and not take any risk and take your money and put it in a pillow, but put it under the pillow.
inflation kills it.
Yeah, inflation kills it. So that's not super smart. So you have to do something with your money, and there is going to be a little bit of risk, but you certainly can lower, your risk by, and even Warren Buffett himself says if he didn't have Berkshire Hathaway or even with his kids, he'd just say, look, put it in the S&P 500 and just like basically do nothing and just let it compound over time. And so that is a very low risk. And, you may lose money 1 year, but you're not going to lose money, over, 5 years or 10 years. It's never happened before. So, I think that you have to do something, and, losing money, sometimes even when I wake up and I check my stocks and I go, oh, I lost money overnight. And it's like, well, that's just today, the whole market's gone down. Don't worry about it. It'll be back up tomorrow. But I do get the point. You definitely don't want to lose money over a long period of time. But I think the other school of thought is if you're young enough, or even if you're 50, with modern technology and all this stuff that's coming out with regards to health, if you start looking after yourself, you could live to 90 or 100, and that's my plan. My plan is to, live to 100, and something like 90% of Warren Buffett's wealth came in the last 20 years of his life. And so if you're going to live to 100, you've got plenty of time. Don't want anyone thinking, oh, I'm 50 and I've kind of like lost my chance. It's like, no, you've got 50 years of compounding left. You've got heaps of time. And I think even if you make a couple of bad decisions, even if you lose a little bit of money, in the past it would have been like, you're 50 years of age, you lost the money and you didn't have the time to rebuild again. Like people are kind of, I hear sometimes people talking about, oh yeah, 10 years ago I lost all of this money. It's like, well, what have you done since then? You've had 10 years to make it back, or you've had 10 years to do a whole bunch of other stuff, and you're still whinging and complaining about the money you lost 10 years ago. Just like, let it go and move on and keep moving forward. And if you lose money, you just dust yourself off and you learn from it and you just keep moving forward. So yeah, I agree with Warren's advice around losing money, I don't think people should be so scared about, I think doing nothing is actually worse.
Yeah, I agree. It's funny how many people I've met in my life that, at age 50 and they're like, God, I wish I started investing earlier. And so what's that saying? When was the best time to buy property? Yesterday. When's the second best time to buy property? Today.
Yeah.
So very good. All right. Now, there is one thing I haven't told you, Dale. There is a surprise question. It's because these questions are on the website, so it's not a surprise trick, but it's the last question. Yes. And it's related to that individual's expertise and obviously your entrepreneurial skill. So what advice would you give parents on how to instill an entrepreneurial spirit in children?
That's a really good question. So I think that if you think about, you know, what entrepreneurship is, like oftentimes we would associate that with, you know, starting a business, you know, at some type of an enterprise. But an entrepreneur was like the person that used to make like a theater show, and they would have to hire the actors, and they would have to book the theater, and they would have to, you know, go and like figure out who's going to sell the tickets, and they'd have to think about the advertising. And that was the entrepreneur that used to, you know, hundreds of years ago, put on a show. And and so what you could do with your kids, you know, is basically, even if they're 5 years old, you know, start with something like, let's organize a birthday party. Okay. And we're going to do this together. They're not starting a business, but they're learning about, okay, well, what do we need to do to start this business? That's great. We need to come up with some invitations. That's called marketing. You know, we need to book a venue, you know, that's going to be, you know, we need to maybe hire, you know, a clown, that's like staff, you know, so, and what's our budget for this and things like that. So what I would suggest is get your kids involved in projects, you know, whether that be, you know, organizing a Christmas party, or whether that be let's plan our itinerary, or let's kind of coordinate, you know, a you know, landscaping. So we're going to do this type of stuff. And unknowingly, they're developing these entrepreneurial skills around time management, around prioritization, around making sure that we are allocating our resources wisely. We're saying yes to some, saying no to some things, so we can say yes to other things. I think if you can kind of start to develop those skills at a younger age, and all you do is you just plug in, you know, the right business opportunity, and then voila, this person is suddenly a, you know, and a real entrepreneur in terms of a business entrepreneur, but they've got a lot of these skills, you know, that you've learned, they've learned by default.
Dale, that's brilliant. And then what we could do is send them an invoice and teach them about accounting. And then on the way out, eat a third of their ice cream and teach them about tax.
Yeah, exactly.
Excellent. All right. Well, that's it, Dale. Thank you so much for being on the show. I know you're off traveling again. I've really enjoyed it. I think I've got so much out of this. It's unreal. Thank you for being on 10 with Ty.
Pleasure. Good luck, everybody.
Now, if you've got this far, you must have liked the podcast. And if you have, could you leave a review? You know, these things help. Now, if you've been impressed with Dale, and I'm sure you have, you can work with Dale by visiting www.businessblueprint.com. That's www.businessblueprint.com. And if you've liked this episode, don't forget to subscribe. 10 with Ty is brought to you by Washington Brown, the property depreciation expert. Thank you.